This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for October 1st, 2015. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we spend the program with Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis. On October 14th, U.S. District Court in Portland will hear oral arguments for Penobscot Nation versus Maine Attorney General Janet Mills. The Penobscot Nation is opposing the 2012 opinion by the Maine Attorney General's office that the Penobscot Indian Reservation does not include any portion of the Penobscot River flowing through tribal lands, a decision that the Penobscot Nation argues amounts to a territorial taking by the state. We speak with Chief Francis about this case and the separate legal battle concerning the federal EPA's opinion under the Clean Water Act that though Maine does have jurisdiction over water quality standards in tribal waters, the state standards are not high enough to protect sustenance fishing. But first, Chief Francis talks with us about his recent visit to Washington, D.C., where he met with President Obama on these issues. Today, we are honored again to be speaking with Chief of the Penobscot Nation, Kirk Francis. Welcome back to the program, Chief Francis.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
So we have had you on the program a number of times to talk about the issues which you discussed with President Obama and congressional staffers a couple of weeks ago in Washington, D.C., one being the state of Maine's current attempt to erase the Penobscot River that flows through Penobscot land from your reserve territory. And this legal battle is currently playing out in the federal court case Penobscot Nation v. Mills or versus Maine Attorney General Janet Mills, the federal government intervening in this case on behalf of the Penobscot Nation. And other legal battle concerning the tribe, state, and federal governments is over water quality standards in tribal waters. The EPA recently telling the state that their standards are not high enough to protect sustenance fishing, and now the state is suing the EPA. Then there are numerous other issues concerning interpretation of the Maine Indian Settlement Act, including Wabanaki tribes' ability to access protections afforded to other federally recognized tribes, and this includes the Violence Against Women Act, which we've also talked about on this program. And we'll link to archives of past programs in the archives of this program on the website for people who want to have more extensive background on that and interviews with you in the past. So, Chief Francis, again, welcome to the program. We'll have you update us a little more thoroughly on those current issues, the current status of those issues that we just mentioned. But first, if you want to tell us about your trip to Washington, partly to attend the National Congress of American Indians Tribal Impact Days, partly to meet with congressional officials on some of these issues we mentioned, and in part, as it happened, to discuss issues directly with President Obama. If you could tell us about some of that.
Sure. As we've mentioned before, we've tried over the last 6 years or so to really elevate our federal presence and foster our federal trust relationship with the federal government, and that's, exists with the three branches of government, and so we spend time on all of those things. One of the things, good things about this president is that he has a senior policy advisor on Indian affairs within the White House, and has had that position since he's been president. And those people that fill those roles, are well-known people throughout Indian country and people we know and are friends with. And it allows us an opportunity to really dialogue with the executive branch on issues that face Native America in general, but specifically here at Penobscot and all the tribes in Maine. So having that ability to have that conversation, having a president that not only has these advisors and regular conversations on the issues, but also has set up things like the White House Council on Native American Affairs, made up of cabinet members, also having the Tribal Nations Conference every year, where we're interfacing with very high-level people in the president himself. So what that does as well is it has an effect on every federal agency because it sends a message that this is important, right? So we're starting to see these things through these conversations transition into action in terms of United States intervention in our case, the EPA's position on determining uses under the Clean Water Act and recognizing sustenance and subsistence-based lifestyles. And so so we spend a lot of time doing that. And, of course, a lot of the, you know, the legislative process within Congress is obviously very, very important, too, with implementation of things like VAWR and
Violence Against Women Act.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly, and all of that. So we spend a lot of time on these issues. We have a full-time lobbying team in Washington, D.C. And so the recent trip was part of a broader Native American, you know, the National Congress of American Indian, which represents, you know, hundreds of Native American tribes in the country, come into town, get an update on the issues for half a day, and then all congressional visits after that, and political events, and all those types of things. So we do that a lot. And so this time, you know, I had the honor of being invited to a presidential meeting with the president himself, and had the ability to talk about our issues here in Maine, and to also thank him for the proactive approach of the Department of Justice and Department of Interior and the EPA in their approach towards core cultural tribal rights. And so you know, it was a good week. We had dozens of congressional meetings, and we're doing a lot of educating on the inequities in Maine, but we're also really focusing on how we elevate our tribal agenda through you know, our federal partners. And so I thought overall it was a very productive week, and also, you know, very exciting to obviously get to sit with a sitting president and talk about Penobscot-specific issues.
And the specific issues, again, that you spoke with him about were Penobscot v. Mills, also the EPA water quality issue, and some of the others. Can you talk a little bit about the issues that you did talk with him about?
And so, you know, I talked to him about, you know, again, we thanked him for the United States intervention in Penobscot versus Mills. You know, gave a brief update on where the case is, talked about, you know, the attempted territorial removal, the very serious things that are going on, not just at Penobscot, but we see this across the country a little bit in these hostile states, not to the level we see in Maine, unfortunately, but, you know, explain, you know, again, reminding him what the case was about, what's going on, and asked for his steadfast support in making sure we see this all the way through, you know, no matter how long the case goes on. And so we also talked to him a lot about the EPA, which is an agency that's consistently under fire within Congress, and recently that's been no different. And we wanted to make sure he understood that they're doing a lot of great things out there too, and that you know, this approach by the administrator to say, even in states where states have jurisdiction over water quality, you're going to recognize a different human health criteria, and you're going to move your standards to a level that is conducive to a sustainable subsistence, sustenance-based right. So so we talked about that, and also, you know, continued to ask for support there. And, you know, they ought to really reach out to EPA and thank them for their proactive approach there. And, you know, we just talked about overall Settlement Act issues and the inequities of applications of laws passed by Congress and you know, economic barriers and a lot of things that have been caused by this narrow interpretation and very illegal approach based on federal Indian law to the tribes of Maine. And so, so yeah, we got a lot of that stuff in.
Again, just to emphasize, as you have now and in the past, that the Maine Indian Settlement Act, the state of Maine has continually pushed an interpretation of that act, which excludes Maine Wabanaki tribes from federal protections that are passed by the U.S. Congress.
That's right. And so, you know, the state has taken the position that whether there's a serious threat to or concern to the jurisdictional stress that would cause or not, whether it's an internal tribal matter or not, whether it's they just take an across-the-board approach to blocking the tribes from any bill passed by Congress that benefits Indians generally. And many times the tribes of Maine are the only tribes in America that do not have access to those basic tools that are really put in place to overcome centuries of deprivation and to fix conditions that exist, to grow economies, to do a whole host of things within Native America. And after a lot of work and time and input from states, by the way, and a whole host of things in the congressional process that happened, these things are put in place, and the tribes here are consistently blocked by it because of an attorney general's office, quite frankly, that's just not going to give an inch. And again, you know, the tribe really never understood the act to be set up that way, never understood. Matter of fact, if you look at, you know, how the Settlement Act was kind of touted at the end of it by the Senate committee, you know, the tribes were supposed to be forever free from state interference. It's supposed to be a whole host of sovereign enhancements. And what people lose sight of, too, is we were under total federal jurisdiction at the time of the settlement. I mean, we had already been federally recognized. We already had programs here, and we were completely under a self-governing status. And I cannot imagine a situation where a tribe in that situation at that time cedes or gives up the rights that they say they try to say we did at a time when they had total sovereign authority. So it makes no sense the approach they take. And finally, we feel like they're being watched and held accountable. And that's a good feeling not to be alone in that.
Are you speaking specifically in this case of the U.S. government intervening in Penobscot Nation v. Mills and having the EPA stand up for tribes in Maine with the water quality?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this is precedent setting, and it's historic. You know, the United States doesn't sue states. I mean, typically, it just doesn't get. States don't get sued over Native issues, and you're seeing more and more of an, especially on these issues of territorial removal, you know, trying to take pieces of cultural identity away from tribes. I mean, really trying to exterminate them as Indian people. You know, they're saying you're affecting our ability in this trust fiduciary relationship, which is the highest level of relationship that a country can have with any entity. You're not going to do it because you're affecting our ability to be productive in that. And so, and address real on-the-ground disparities that are, you know, that have no place in this country in 2015. So yeah, I think that approach and that mindset and people telling the state of Maine, I mean, if you look at the United States filing in the case, if you look at what they're saying, they're basically saying, you cannot do this. I mean, there's basic human rights you're violating here. And so, you know, we're really happy, you know, litigation is litigation. You never really know how that's going to turn out. We're confident and we feel very strongly about our beliefs and our position. But at the end of the day, you know, we feel really good that we're not the only ones saying.
Again, we're speaking with Chief Kirk Francis of the Penobscot Nation about his recent visit to D.C. and the current court case Penobscot Nation versus Maine Attorney General Janet Mills. The tribe is contesting a 2012 decision by the state that the Penobscot Reservation does not include any portion of the Penobscot River. Oral arguments are being heard on October 14th. Again, Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis talking about the current court case, Penobscot Nation v. Mills. This has to do with the 2012 decision or memorandum by the then Attorney General Schneider. Now Attorney General Mills has not shifted position on this memo that declared that the water in the Penobscot River flowing through Penobscot Indian lands is not the jurisdiction of the tribe. And this is a complete change to how things had been operating. But the excuse, again, I guess, is interpretation of the Settlement Act, a brand new interpretation by the state. And again, we will clarify in a minute when we get to the EPA water quality issue. When we're talking about jurisdiction in this case, we're not talking about, in this particular instance, about water quality jurisdiction. We're just talking about recognizing that this is part of the tribe's land and part of the tribe's sustenance fishery.
Exactly. And, you know, the position, as you mentioned, is that, you know, we don't have any jurisdiction within the river. And, you know, obviously that's a huge problem for the tribe. I mean, we're made up, we're riverine people, riverine culture. 220 plus islands make up our reservation in the river, over 70 miles. And you have a sustenance fishing right that's not only ratified in multiple treaties, but again recognized in the Settlement Act. You have an attorney general's opinion in 1988 on a salmon controversy that says it's totally legal. They have sustenance rights in the river. United States Congress, the United States themselves, in this case, are saying the exact same thing the tribe is. You have Department of Interior opinions that in the main stem, it's a bank-to-bank authority for the tribes, for the tribe here. So for the state just to write a paragraph in 2012 saying you have no jurisdiction in the Penobscot River and basically are now taking the position that, well, if you stand on the island and cast, you know, you can fish there, you know. So the position is we'll let you go fish. We're not gonna recognize your right to manage that,
which is currently managed under a very reputable Penobscot Nation Natural Resources Department, which historically has interfaced with state agencies in protection of the environment, the Penobscot River environment.
That's exactly right, and our Natural Resource Department is really second to none. I mean, it's they operate at a very high level. We do tons of water quality testing. We have our own laboratory with, you know, GIS mapping, warden service, a whole host of things that forestry department. We do a whole lot of work around the environment of the tribe, around the natural resources of the tribe, and nothing's more important than the river. We put most of our resources into that through fisheries programs, water quality programs, lab programs, etc. So the river is obviously extremely important to us. So we're not only saying that we have this treaty reserved, Settlement Act recognized right to sustenance fish, but statutorily what that says is when you're taking wildlife, you're trapping, you're fishing within that sustenance resource, that's under the exclusive authority of the tribe to manage on its tribal members. And so we have in the main stem, if you're affecting a sustenance resource, then our folks have the right to manage that. And that's all we've ever said. We're not saying we want control of the whole river. We're not saying that we're going to drive everybody out of the river. We're not saying we're going to permit everybody in the river. What we're saying is that when you're taking a sustenance-based resource that we have a responsibility to protect for multiple generations, then we have to effectively manage that. So we have to know that activity. We have to understand that formally through nominal permitting we do on some things, et cetera. So our position is when it comes to the sustenance fishery and the main stem of the river, that's under the exclusive authority of the Penobscot Nation. And the state takes a position that that fishery doesn't exist, even though Settlement Act talks about sea run fish and all of that. They're saying your fishery is on the islands where there is no fishery. So basically they're separating us from our ancestral practices and cultural identity, and that's the seriousness of it.
So the court case is called Penobscot Nation v. Mills, and on October 14th, the U.S. District Court in Portland will hear oral arguments. And again, to say the Penobscot Nation did bring the state to court to ask for a federal decision, and the federal government has intervened, as we've said. So talk with us a little bit about where things are in the legal proceedings right now, again, October 14th being the court date.
Right. So October 14th is oral arguments, and both sides have filed for judgment based on the plain language of the law that both sides have filed for that. So there's not a trial per se. Summary judgment, they call it. So the courts asked for oral arguments on the 14th. I think after that, the judge has it, and he will make a decision. And of course, that could take however long it takes, so there's no real time frame on that. But really, right now we're in the 11th hour of getting a decision in that case. You know, it's a real stressful time for the tribe. We're We're really nervous about outcomes, but at the same time, we're really optimistic because we feel like we've worked really hard to educate people and to put a case together that is really based on sound fact and exactly what we know, and that this is our ancestral river, and we share its name, and we're been here for thousands of years. Nobody disputes that, and we have a responsibility to continue to fight for that right. And it's, again, it's not just about putting fishing lines in the water. It's about people being able to be Penobscot, and every kid that's born being able to be Penobscot, because once that's gone, that practice is gone, and that right to sustain ourselves in that river system is gone, then Penobscot people won't exist as they did. So that's the seriousness of it.
And finally, Chief Francis, anything that you want to talk about? The general mindset that the different perspectives are coming from as far as tribal sovereignty, but also environmental integrity and what you think might be behind some of the state's action.
Sure. I think that, what you have here is two totally different just worldviews and philosophies on life and obviously cultures. And what I've found through this process, though, is that the state of Maine has amazing people and people that are coming to our aid. They're coming to support us. We get hundreds of phone calls and emails, and so we're really, really proud of the relationships we've built. That's one positive from the case, is that we've built a lot of friendships. And I think that, the Attorney General was recently quoted as saying, that the river is a resource for all of Maine. And we agree. I mean, we understand that's a public resource. We understand that, many Maine citizens care about that river. They participate in activities in the river, and they should. It's a beautiful place. And I think that, so we understand that. And our philosophy is basically, we're not looking to own anything. We're not looking to say we have control of anything. What we're saying is that within this river, within the main stem of the Penobscot River, there is an ancient culture that lives there. And that culture has rights. They have a right to be who they are. And so no matter what's going on in the system, all we're saying is you got to recognize that activity. You got to recognize and respect the culture that lives within that geographical location. And you have to respect that by making sure that a sustenance and subsistence-based lifestyle that is a huge part of a cultural identity is not terminated. That's all we're saying. And nobody can manage that better than the tribe, that piece of it. So this scare tactics about, they're trying to manage everybody, they're trying to do this. The reality is that's what they're trying to do. They want to make sure that they have the say on industry within them. Why do you think industry and the state are partnered on this? The interveners, that's all that is wastewater discharge people. And they're partnered with the state as interveners because they're more confident that they can get more leniency out of that process, or they have the fear that they're not going to get that kind of leniency from the tribe, which... all we're saying is just be at an appropriate level so people can actually eat the fish that are in the river. But, it tells you a little bit of something when they're partnered there on this type of thing. So why would industry be so freaked out about this case over sustenance fishing and side with the state against the tribes? I mean, I don't have the answer to that except... to tell you that mindset on that side has a lot to do with business and industry and very little to do with making sure that, the Penobscot River is available to all Maine people. I mean, I think it's a ridiculous argument to say that it wouldn't be when the treaties themselves talk about rights to pass and repass, rights to use the river, when... we're talking about a specific geographical location around islands within the reservation that have to possess this activity. And when we have state-trained game wardens, state-certified game wardens, mostly enforcing state law out there, coming in contact with people and managing a sustenance resource in a very, very responsible way. You're not seeing them screaming about, you know, some egregious enforcement by the tribe. That's not what's going on. I mean, our wardens are state certified. They lose that certification, they can't patrol anymore. That's a Settlement Act agreement. So they have to act in the same manner as any other law enforcement officer. So all of these scare tactics really boil down to, we want the control because we want to say what the pollution levels are in the Penobscot River without the tribes having a voice. And that is basically all it boils down to at the end of the day.
And that's not even what Penobscot Nation v. Mills specifically is about, because the water quality jurisdiction is a whole other issue.
Exactly. And, you know, the water quality stuff is playing out separately, as we briefly talked about. That's between EPA and Maine under the Clean Water Act. Then you have the Johnson decision. You have the Maine versus Johnson decision.
In 2007.
That talks about wastewater discharge and who has that. This case has nothing at all to do with that. Matter of fact, a majority of the interveners are downstream and out of the geographical location of what we're even talking about. So it's really concerning when, you know, supposedly responsible people are running around and, you know, telling everybody this narrative that the United States and the Penobscots are trying to take the river from the people of Maine. And I just think that the more people get educated, they're understanding a couple things. One, you know, that's not factual. And two, you know, maybe we want to be on the right side of this. And I think people are really starting to see the value in partnering with the tribe, finding solutions for environmental issues. And we know that that's all got to be balanced with the economy. I mean, we get that. I mean, you know, I was reading the paper yesterday about two mill closures, one right here in Old Town, where people I went to high school with work. And all, I mean, it's sad to watch those economies, those local economies crumble like that. All we've ever been saying is just deal with the environment responsibly. And I think that, you know, most of Maine people are starting to see the value in that as well, and starting to see what we're about, and really not about control, but more about just responsibility.
So October 14th, the public is welcome to attend to witness the oral arguments in Portland.
That's right. Yep, right in the federal court building in Portland. You know, we appreciate people's support. You know, we'll all be there and, you know, listen closely and see kind of where things go from there.
Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis, we thank you again for joining us today in WERU and informing us about so many of these issues, and we'll keep in conversation with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I always appreciate being on, and it's always a pleasure, and these issues are very important, not just to the tribe, but to everyone in the state of Maine, I think, and that wants a more unified approach to our future together, and I think it's... So, again, you know, it's always a pleasure to be on in the way you raise these issues. And, you know, we really appreciate it.
To view the recently released documentary on Penobscot Nation v. Mills, the history of tribal-state relations concerning Penobscot territory, and a look at the tribe's current environmental stewardship, called The Penobscot Ancestral River Contested Territory, you can go to sunlightmediacollective.org. And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. You can listen to archives of this and other locally produced public affairs programming at weru.org.